That's right. Welcome back to Sports Intoxication. We are back, and you have missed the shit out of us. It's been too long since we recorded. We apologize for that, but this is the podcast you've been waiting your entire life for, and it is here. And tonight, we have the guest that we've been waiting our entire lives to have on this podcast.
Wow.
Very, very special guest appearance by Paul Daner Jr. of the Cincinnati Inquirer and Cincinnati.com.
Hey! Man, I get claps.
I'll take claps. I'm just pumped to be here in your kitchen.
We agreed pre-show. We weren't going to do claps, and then we just went.
You just did it. You just like, you know, we should clap, I think.
That's what happens here.
It's a great studio.
So what's going on? Great intro. Thank you for giving me the intro music.
Yeah, that was your intro music.
My favorite concert I've ever been to, 1999, Bogarts.
I was there. Outkast.
Yes. It was unbelievable. It was Outkast before Outkast became massive.
We were 12.
I went with my buddy. The old guys are going to tell stories here for a second. We went with my buddy.
So your mom didn't drop you off at the Kitty Corral?
It was unbelievable. Well, I remember being kind of scared because at that point in time, unlike now, Clifton was not so safe.
No.
And we were like going, the two kids from the Burbs, a little nervous about going down there. We went and it was the greatest thing I've ever been a part of.
Let me ask you this.
They had so many old dudes in rocking chairs playing harmonicas. Like, I was just like, I want more of this. I want to know what this
is. Did you go to the cupboard before or after?
The where?
Cupboard.
I did not go to that. I wasn't old enough to drink at that point in time. I didn't do any of that.
Good answer. Good answer.
Okay. I don't know that.
All right. So, we're 2.5 minutes in and we're off track, and I love it because that's what we do. This is Sports Intoxication, as I already mentioned, and we are a bunch of friends drinking beers around a microphone and talking sports. And tonight we're probably going to talk a little bit of Bengals because we got Paul here with us. But we'll, of course, veer off track. And Paul, being the Cincinnati Bearcat fan that he is, we'll probably talk a little.
Fan. I covered the team for a number of years. I was definitely, the word I would use.
Okay, journal.
I had to put that aside.
Yeah. Okay, that's my bad. I misspoke.
No, it's okay.
But no, full disclosure.
I don't want to be like the, because you guys are a bunch of Xavier people here. I don't want to get beat up at the end.
No. Full disclosure. Paul and I went to grade school together.
Yes.
And Paul, I think, wore number 3 for a lot of years,
rocking the
D Flint jersey.
D Flint was my dude. I don't know why. That just shows how little of an understanding of basketball I had at that point.
He was a McDonald's All-American.
He was great. He was great. He cost them a lot of big games. Sorry. There were other better players on that team that needed to have the ball.
Like Bobby Brandon
from
Alabama.
He was going to go ISO. Okay.
Bobby Brandon from Mueller. His hair cost them a lot of game.
His post moves were fundamentally sound.
And his barbed wire tattoo was badass back in the day.
Nobody had a tattoo.
So was Pamela Anderson's.
That's true.
Wow, there you go.
They might have gotten the same tattoo.
We're off to a fast start.
Yeah, we really are.
There's a lot of crossing going off on Sox's checklist over there.
Was getting to Pamela Anderson's tattoo on that notepad
earlier than we've ever gotten to Pamela Anderson on any recording? 4 minutes and 20 seconds. That's
right.
A new record.
420. How many minutes?
Yeah, I knew you were going to go there. 420. Yeah, there you go, Connor. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about the draft, but because we've already broached the subject, Monday, your podcast at 50 West Brewing, which was very well done, I enjoyed myself, but there was something you said about a player that was drafted by the Bengals that went to, I think you described it as the greatest high school in the world?
The greatest, yeah. The greatest high school.
And what high school was that?
Mueller High School.
Oh, okay. So
it's a great place.
Yeah, okay, well, you know.
Home of the current state champions in basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we were all, while I was in school, you were with the St. X, we won the state championship then as well.
Bomber, 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 bomber.
I'm just pointing out
that you're talking about swimming, aren't
we? Yeah, I was going to say, I believe we have basketball. Swimming stage.
I would never talk swimming in this room.
Yeah. Aqua bombers, like, you know.
Or diving.
I don't even think they put divers in.
They don't?
I don't know.
You would win that, I'm sure.
Fact is, you're right. He doesn't know. Well, did you swim for a year? Or like?
No,
I guarantee the last time he swam was
5:30 in the morning.
It's too early for me. Sullivan in gym class sophomore year.
I swam freshman year for 2 weeks.
Oh god,
it was miserable.
That explains a lot.
All right, so let's move on a little bit now that we got that unpleasantness out of the way.
I never even had a taper, and it was miserable.
All right, so we're gonna talk a little bit about the agony that Paul just went through with 3 nonstop days of NFL draft coverage, and probably, I mean, hopefully you got some time to mix a cocktail in there too, or a beer or whatever.
Just thanks to the trade on Friday night, we were able to make last call. That was really the most important part of trading up from 100 to 78.
That's huge.
100 was the last pick on Friday night. It was the one pick I dreaded all weekend because you have to sit around and it goes. So it was like would have been like 11 o'clock. It gave us an extra hour. And once we crank the story out, enough time to sneak in at least one beer before we went back. So I appreciated the trade. Marvin finally giving the scribe something.
I'm very green on this. Can you talk a little bit about draft night? From your perspective, I assume you're at Paul Brown Stadium in the media room, just kind of hanging out, watching the draft.
Yeah, and most people, it's funny, like most people when they talk about the draft, they say, oh, well, how are you going to Dallas or how's Dallas or whatever? I'm like, you don't go. No one goes. The only person from the Bengals that goes is they literally send one person who is Nick Cosgrave this year, who's like an athletic trainer. He's one of their rehab directors. He is the only person in Dallas, and they literally just call him, give him the card with this name on it. That's it. Everybody else, they have their war room, or as Duke says, it's not a war room. No one has ever died. But, you know, it's their room, their draft room is at PBS. And so once the pick is made, we all usher ourselves. We go down to the press conference room, and they will have Marvin. They will have the coordinator and the position coach of whoever they just picked. And they'll do a little mini press conference that lasts 5-10 minutes. They do that for essentially every pick, unless the picks are so close together that they just combine them into multiple. But they would prefer to do them all every single one.
Right. Yeah. Gotcha. Interesting.
So you said they send one guy potentially, and it doesn't sound like that person is of relevance as far as their role with the team.
An order taker.
Potentially, they could send 4 guys next year, maybe.
Let me just say, if you're trying to nominate yourself, I'm going to say they're probably going to vet that, and this is probably going to be part of the vetting process.
That's fair.
And you probably, that's not going to be good for you.
So we get the phone call. All right, we're going to take this guy.
No, we're not.
Not so fast, my friend.
They need to have an ability to take your job away from you. That they need to have some sort of recourse. That's key.
Yes. So would you be the guy that could walk out on stage and announce the pick?
Who could do that? You?
You.
Why would I do that?
He's got to cover it.
I don't have anything to do with that.
I have a
story to write.
You have a face for TV. You're hiding behind a fucking microphone.
I'm where you told me to sit, first of all. I'm not doing anything.
all right. So that's interesting because I kind of also, even though I know that they make the announcements and stuff at PBS, some in my mind I kind of thought somebody, they would be there. I don't know.
Yeah, there's just the one person. They call them, tell them to turn the card in, and that's pretty much everything else is because they have so much, all their stuff stationed there that they need to be on hand. So it makes for 3 long days for everybody at PBS, not just not just us.
How do they choose you there? Food good, drink good?
They do. It's good, actually. During draft weekend, we're allowed to eat the team food, the team. But not any other time during the year. Well, because they don't want us in there when the players are in there feeling like we're going to make players nervous or something like that. But during draft weekend, there are no players. It's just coaches and stuff. So we're able. Their food is good. Their food is really good. We just are often getting Jimmy John's during the season, unfortunately, because it's the only thing that really delivers downtown.
Natural segue to another question that I think that Casey had.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talking on food, I guess. Food, yeah. So the best in terms of, this is not draft related, but in terms of, you've been probably to what? How many of the NFL stadiums have you been to?
I don't know.
Touched them all
majority,
yet?
Majority. I've not touched them all. Yeah. Lambeau was a big one this year. That was my first trip to Lambeau. That was cool.
So, favorite, least favorite, best, worst, in terms of covering, in terms of enjoying the city?
I will say Nashville is is got to be, because I like drivables.
Sure.
Drivables are huge. I don't want to get caught in some flying or layover situation where it just ruins your whole weekend is stolen from you, and that can happen. So I like drivables, and I like what's that?
You have kids?
I have one daughter, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, she's turning one this weekend.
Oh, double congratulations.
It's huge.
No, that's a game changer. Like, if you're a single guy, maybe a wife, you get stuck layover, no big deal. But when you've got to get home to see your daughter.
No, schedule's like you're staying as late as you can and still be able to go and have the good time. So Nashville is good because it's drivable. It's an awesome, fun city. Yep. There's tons of stuff to do. The stadium, it's a good stadium for the press as well. They're one of the few stadiums that still have the nice low press box in like the second level. Most of the press boxes now, they have been kicked up to the top corners because they're trying to get all their suite holders in to make money because they don't make any money off of us. and that's fine. I get it. But anyway, so Nashville is great. I'm trying to think what I hate. Cleveland is... There's only one good thing about Cleveland is that we always seem to get sent there in December, and then we go to Great Lakes and we just get destroyed.
Okay.
And so I had never
go to the,
I mean, never get drunker or more hungover than I do bar. In Cleveland.
What's that? Do you go to that little shotgun style bar?
We go to their place that's right across the street from their brewery.
It's a shotgun style bar.
It's a restaurant. Yeah,
it's down in Ohio City
with the bullet hole still from. Yeah.
Elliot Ness, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now that's a great
chase with the save.
The history in that place is amazing.
We go in there. Well, I don't know. Only thing, though, there's only history with me being drunk in there. That's the only thing I know, because we go down there and every single trip we go to Cleveland, we go down there and have dinner and drink too much down there.
You
and,
need to
and
check
getting
out.
Back and getting myself. At one point, I actually had our whole crew walking the complete wrong direction of downtown Cleveland. We all had to get in different cabs to go all the way back to where our hotel actually was. But it's because the Great Lakes. It's because it's when you get the Christmas sale in December.
Oh, yeah, you're there in December. Christmas sale.
That's what it is. That's the difference maker. Now, this year, we're back again. December 20th. And for the freshest it could possibly be. Right?
I'm just looking at the schedule. Right? The only problem with that is I think it's not Lake Erie Monster season at that time.
All I drink is Christmas ale when I go up there.
You need to get some Lake Erie Monster.
Their Chill Wave, which I hate the name, they rebranded it. The Finger Bang, I can't even think of the name. But
I'm not drinking anything called Finger Bang.
I'm going to go on the record with that one.
I vehemently disagree with that. Like, I think
if I was looking at a can and it said Finger Bang on it, I'd probably just be like, anything else?
I wouldn't double up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so the Factory of Sadness is the worst.
That's probably... I'm trying to go through them in my head right now, but...
Nosferatu. Great beer.
Nosferatu is delicious.
He remembers it. Got it! In the middle of Paul's thought.
Got it.
No, that's not the Chill Wave. Chill Wave is we call something else.
I don't know. That's probably... Those are the two that pop up off the top of my head.
Cleveland's better than Buffalo? Have you been to Buffalo?
Okay, so here's
your... I was in Buffalo last week in April, and it
on
sucks.
On purpose?
Yes.
Unfortunately,
Buffalo, by the way, I have a lot of Buffalo experience.
Yeah.
My wife's family is from Buffalo, so we go back. Buffalo is glorified Sharonville.
Yes.
It is my favorite way to describe Buffalo, because if anybody who's ever been in Sharonville, they know exactly what I'm talking about. It just is barren, and like, it's just... weirdly, like, kind of awful, but there's still things that make you think real culture happens here, but it really doesn't.
No.
Yeah. So that's kind of my now. But I love going to Buffalo because My wife's grandmother lives there and loves to throw parties in her basement.
Okay.
And so we go to grandma's basement every time we go to Buffalo, and it is lit. It is a great time. So I love going to Buffalo. So that's the reason. Okay. It's an obvious one that you would think sucks. But actually, personally for me, I enjoy.
Weather-wise. So you enjoy it. Everyone else hates it. But.
Oh, no, well... All the writers like it. They get to come to Grandma's basement, as well. Nice. Hey, they're invited, and so
the wings got to be decent, right? Like,
their press box experience is not bad. Although I had a bad experience there a couple years back. It was they used to do it where they were under construction for their new press box they were making, which was like I was saying earlier, up in a corner, but you had to walk. When the Bengals had won, Mike Nugent hit a game-winning field goal at the end.
Didn't happen much.
Breaking news.
Back-to-back weeks that season. It was there and Detroit. Back-to-back weeks. The first one was Buffalo. So we had to go against the grain in a giant concourse of all angry Buffalo fans coming up and try to squeeze through them for about 50 yards in order to get into where you went down to the visitor's press box. I don't know what happened. Everybody like blacked out trying to get through. It was like at one point I think someone crowd surfed across to try and get in there. So it was up, but that's what that stadium is. It's old and it's pretty crappy. I mean, but Buffalo is definitely what I can understand people not liking.
One of the things I follow on Instagram is Barstool Sports.
Yeah,
and literally in football season, all it is
Bills Mafia. Is
that real thing?
Bill's Mafia is a real thing, yeah.
I mean, it's just not 20 dudes doing stupid shit.
I mean, how many tables can you light on fire, and how much like public sex can you have?
I'll tell you what.
Hold on, there's a limit to those things.
I mean, apparently you can do that all the time, and it's just hashtag
Bill's Mafia. If this wasn't a podcast, I would light that table on fire and fucking jump through it.
You should be aware of that, Kevin. That's your table, I think.
Maybe we'll get a new one.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's no camera here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or fortunately, depending on how you look at it. So, So Buffalo is a favorite.
Buffalo is okay by me.
Yeah, okay.
Good. Buffalo and Nashville is what we heard.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Well, while we're on the schedule, do you like the...
Oh, Houston sucks. Sorry. I got stuck there on Christmas Eve two years ago. We played there on Christmas Eve a couple years ago. You want to see depression in one place? Go to the Houston airport on Christmas morning. There is absolutely nothing worse than that. But anyway, sorry, I had to make sure. That was important.
Do you like your draw for this year? I'm looking at the schedule right now. It doesn't seem too
not bad. LA, I'm excited about.
San Diego in December?
There's no San Diego. They're in the LA now.
That's right.
Come on.
The StubHub
Center. All
20,000 are mostly Bengals fans, I would assume. Yeah, in December. So that's
tickets still available.
Charlotte and Atlanta is a great 1-2 combo in the first month of the season because I wanted to get down there. Like, September is a great time for those two cities. So I was...
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Podcast. You pick the city. We're there.
Oh, you want to go?
Oh, we're in. You at least two of us will go.
I'm going to have a newborn. So. You just signed everyone up for a trip across country if I say L.A.?
No, I'm talking Atlanta and Charlotte.
Oh, one of those two? Oh, I mean... I
heard there's golf there, Matt.
Why don't we do Indy September 9th?
Indy is a good one. We can do it inside of Ike and Jonesy's. It'd be real weird. You ever been there?
I've not been there.
Don't go there. It's awful.
I've been to a lot of places in Indy, but not there.
Hey, my beer's empty. When do I get a new one?
Yeah, we got you.
I mean, I figured that was the whole point. Am I supposed to get drunker?
Yeah, Matt, that's absolutely the point.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that was the name.
There's none in the bottom shelf.
This is podcast gold right now. Yes. Describing about where the beers are,
where the beers are, and which ones are coldest. That's important, though. I feel like you're owning your brand.
Yeah, without a doubt. Just killing it. All right.
Shots fired.
Boom.
Sounds like you scribes are just all hung over on Sunday mornings. Is that pretty much right? There's no doubt.
There are a lot of people with a lot of good stories. I don't want to tell them for them, but basically, you don't understand. Having to learn to write and show up hungover is part of the deal. Like that is that is part of the deal when you cover the NFL, especially when like this year will be a whole lot of Sunday at ones.
Yep.
That's why the 4 o'clock kickoff is glorious. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The last few years have been great because we you get all day Sunday. You're great by the time you get to this. You don't even have any issues. So
could you blame for that? The team or the ownership?
For them playing Sunday at one all the time?
Yeah. Because
they're not shitty being team. Good?
Yeah.
TV.
I mean, I you know, they're the team is the ones that took the L. Event players play the games, right?
I don't remember what I read today, but I read something that said...
It's a good start.
It's a good start. You read something. All right, you read something.
It may not be factually true, but I may have read it somewhere.
We're not big on facts on this podcast. No. Just
don't be the Steelers and Bengals.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, that was the... Because the league had their safety summit. And it was all about they're talking about the new helm meeting with the head rule and the Steelers they used the Steelers Bengals examples from that game as what you can and cannot do. So that was it though.
That makes complete sense.
The Steelers have been tackling with their this is Ryan Shazier, what happened to him is terrible. No one is claiming that it's not. The Steelers have been tackling that way for years. And that's something coaches have brought up to me. Why is no one talking about the Steelers tackle that way?
He was the one who hit Gio, right?
Absolutely. And Mike Mitchell did it to Tyler Eifert where he went low with his just straight with helmet. It's without the head up, not tackling with proper form. And not that it was inevitable something like that would happen, but that's what happens when you tackle like that. And so it's like, yeah, using that as an example is what exactly what that new rule is going to be all about this year. I'm very curious to see how they actually execute it because that's going to be... You thought pass interference was tough to judge?
Jesus.
As an official? Yeah. Like, now you're sitting there like, oh, what's that? Did he... Is he ejected? Right. I mean, it's going to be madhouse.
I didn't read anything on it. Is it essentially the targeting rule from colleges?
No, it's literally any time anyone does anything using their helmet down as a weapon. So offense running, defense, making a tackle, even a legal tackle, but you do it like this with your head down, you are...
When you do it like this, we can't see that on the podcast.
I said with your head down.
Like this.
I immediately then said afterwards with your head down.
Yeah, he's absolutely right.
Just to try to clarify. But that's... I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how they actually... try to enforce
them.
I think this could be just as big of a change in how the game is played and perceived as when they changed the contact rule back in 11 and turned it into a passing league.
Let me ask you this.
This could be a game-changing type thing.
We're talking about rule changing? Kickoffs.
Yeah.
Are they trying to do away with them?
No, they're trying to change it to a punt.
More so, yeah. I would say it's going to look more like a punt because you will have more
players.
You're taking the wedge players out of it, so you're not going to have the big guys that are just trying to take
off the middle.
Right. So what's going to happen is the reason I like this, you will now have more returns. You will have more returns for touchdowns. It's sort of like when they changed the extra point and it turned to being ceremonial to being something that was actually interesting. I think you will see a higher percentage of kickoffs returned for
touchdowns.
Now that is something I can get behind.
Absolutely.
That is something that makes the game fun. Everybody wants that. It's going to be a lot of small, speedy guys.
How do you eliminate the wedge guy?
It's illegal. All eight guys have to line up along the front line.
Right.
So you only will have three guys in the back. You need fast
guys. Yeah, it's just going to spread out.
You can't have a bunch of linemen trying to run 50 yards back to set their position. And so you're going to have your standard returner, two like blocker types in front of them, and then everybody else is on the people that are on the line, which is usually linebackers and DBs.
What about the team kicking?
The team kicking is the same, but they can't run.
And they're kicking from the same
spot, right?
They're kicking from the same spot,
but they're stationary.
Is this just a free snap? There's no snap count?
This has not been announced officially. This is just what I know. So there may be some elements to this that I don't know. But as far as I know, it's just like it is now, except the people on the kicking team cannot move, and you need eight people on the line. And I think it's going to be a 15-yard non-contact zone. 15 yards between you and eight other guys, and then you'll just have the three back. So it's going to be a bunch of small guys.
Wouldn't they need to move the kick back, though? Like the starting line for the kickoff?
I think they
back?
Still want there to not be as many kickoffs. Yeah, gotcha. So
they'll move it up. Because you can't kick a punt as far
if
as you
they're
can.
They're not punting. They're still kicking.
They're still kicking.
Oh.
They're just kicking. Changing formation.
Yeah, the way the formation
when this
will
decision
make it feel
is made,
more like a punt.
Yeah. I can promise you that, Connor, you'll be the first person the NFL calls to explain
this
whole thing to you. So you'll know, and then you can explain it to the rest of us.
I'll tell you what. I don't like it. Don't like it.
Yeah. Well, they're listening right now, so they now know your
opinion. Well, the one
hey, Roger, you know what I don't like? Raj, you don't like me going to script clubs? And
I like going to script clubs. I'm just being rebellion.
I love kickoffs. Keep the kickoffs.
All right,
what's
so moving
next?
On.
A coin flip?
What do you got? What do you got?
Next.
We're going to do it on Keno?
I think. My next question is, you probably saw what Peter King had to say about the Bengals draft.
Oh, yeah, Lamar Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, thoughts on that? I mean, I feel like...
Wait, Peter King's...
Peter King basically just came out, and he did his draft recap or whatever, and basically said, a lot of people are giving the Bengals good grades for this draft, but I don't understand how they didn't draft Lamar Jackson, essentially saying they need to put pressure on Andy Dalton to perform better.
Right.
But the other side of that is they got to address the offensive line, which
first
is what
foremost,
they did. So.
I don't have a problem with it. The thing with Peter, I don't know. Peter King is like...
New job as of today.
Yeah, NBC Sports Now, leaving SI for 29 years. I mean, he's a golden god of the industry. Like, there's no doubt about him.
Yeah.
He is... incredible.
Former Cincinnati Inquirer?
Post? Yeah, he might have been Post. He covered the team back in the 80s. You know, who knows what happened there, the Bengals wanted everyone to think that they wanted Lamar Jackson. That was a smokescreen. It seemed like the clearest smokescreen ever, that they brought him in, that they pretended to have interest, leaked it to probably sources. I don't know that for certain, but you know, I can tell you it made no sense that they would take Lamar Jackson. Anything they've said or done.
This is not a team that wants a quarterback. This is not a coach that wants a quarterback controversy.
The only thing I said is I would love to see them convince Marvin Lewis that they're going to draft Lamar Jackson without him storming out the doors and we just see him swimming down the Ohio River trying to get away. Like, that is not anything that he would want any part of, and I just don't see how they would convince him to do it. So, to me, it never made any sense. So, maybe Peter had gotten fed something and was not super thrilled about that. I have no idea. I can only tell you that to me, was never something
right,
that they wanted to do.
It just doesn't make sense from a logic standpoint when you look at when Andy Dalton has had a relatively good offensive line and weapons around him. He's been... productive.
He had...
And
everybody wants to recreate 2015.
Right.
Yeah.
You know... The bottom line is, though, that I don't know, like, there's a lot of relying on unreliable sources with that. I mean, Tyler Eifert, John Ross, this offensive line, figuring it out. I mean, there's just a lot of unreliable stuff there. So if you have it set up well around Andy Dalton, he is a great point guard. But he's like Rajon Rondo. He's not like Stephen Curry, okay? Like, you need to have the pieces around him if you're going to really have that. So
the other thing that was interesting, and this is directly stolen from Mo Egger as far as, like, the sarcastic tone of this, but you draft a quarterback, like Peter King was saying, you draft a quarterback to put pressure on Andy. So now all of a sudden Andy's like, I better get better.
Yeah.
I need to throw better. Like, we're talking about a professional quarterback that he's out there. He's doing the best he can. It's not like the guy's not trying. It's not like he's not worried when A.J. McCarron's behind him or...
He was under enough pressure last year getting sacked, 50 times. Yeah.
Pressure has been the problem around here, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't buy that. I mean, I don't buy the pressure.
He's not going anywhere.
Well, but the thing is, to me, the thing is with Andy is it's not about putting pressure on him. I mean, they said, the word that they have used, and I was actually surprised when they used it, when we talked to Bill Lazor right after he took over the job as offensive coordinator at the Combine, He said, we need to make Andy uncomfortable. And that means challenging him to do different things, challenging him to evolve his game. But that's not pressure. That's not, or you lose your job. I think it's about trying to find ways to get better. Hugh Jackson was great at that. He's been known to be good at that. Of course, the Browns are 1-31, so who knows. But, I mean, I'm just saying, I think that...
Is that a good transition?
He's on the Browns. They're fun to talk about. They're so just god-awful.
Oh, boy.
Oh, speaking of which, let's bring this up.
Okay.
That's the topic nobody wants to touch, but we're going to touch it. Baker Mayfield, number one overall.
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
Oh, I just thought of, I mean, I was on vacation last week.
And congratulations.
Down in Hilton Head. I was telling Chase this before.
Oh, Cincinnati but, South.
And we're sitting at Salty Dog, you know, and there's a Browns fan next to me at 7:30.
Right, is this story sponsored by Lacoste?
Right, yeah, exactly. But we're sitting there, and the draft comes on
is
10
that
minutes
a
polar later.
Hat you're wearing?
It is now.
10 minutes later, the Browns take Baker Mayfield, and this Browns fan who's sitting there all excited just goes,
I hope he jumped
what in the fuck?
I hope,
just like, yeah,
I hope he jumped in the fucking water.
Well, first of all, if you're a Browns fan and you weren't following Twitter for the previous 24 hours and you didn't know that they were going to take Baker Mayfield, wake up. I knew that they were going to take Baker Mayfield. Like,
it just seems like... It's
slow.
It seems like they had some other issues that they could have addressed with that number one pick. Now,
they had to take
a quarterback. They had to take a quarterback.
They had to pick one.
Yeah.
Exactly. I find it... Here's the thing. Because I thought this... I think the same thing. You look at it. It's like, look, the funny thing is they draft Baker Mayfield and what any quality broadcast has to do what? They've got to show the video of him getting tackled by police.
Yeah.
A year ago.
Right.
It was not long ago that he was... And then you got to follow it up with what? What are you going to follow it up with? Grabbing his crotch against Kansas. And planting the flag and all that is who he is.
I was a big fan of that move, by the way.
Coaches are not scared of that shit. Coaches are not scared of planting the flag. They're really not scared of grabbing the crotch and talking crap. They like having somebody like that. Well, at least a lot of coaches I talk to, like Vontaze Burfict. So, you know they like that stuff. So, I'm just saying, when you have a guy who is confident and who brings a swagger to your team, coaches are not going to back away with that. But still, I was still surprised how many coaches, scouts, those types that I talk to that love Baker Mayfield.
My question on that would be, what's the difference? Because from someone that's not on the inside, I look at Baker Mayfield and I look at Johnny Manziel and I see a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? Why is Baker Mayfield a better prospect than Manziel?
I don't know. I can tell you this. The one thing I can tell you is this. I think the concern... I think Johnny Manziel had legitimate problems. Like, I think he had a drinking problem, and clearly there were drug problems, and there were swan problems, and there was money phone problems.
I think at this point, that's not an I think.
Yeah, no.
You can safely say...
He had swan problems.
Breaking news.
He had swan in the pool problems. But I think that Baker Mayfield, the problem is he wants to be a celebrity. Yeah. Now, I think he understands that he needs, in order to be a celebrity, he needs to be great at football. But how much will his being a celebrity get in the way of him being great at football? Johnny Manziel's problems got in the way of him being good at football. And I don't know that they're not the same problems. Because I think Baker is significantly better than Johnny Manziel. I mean, look,
accuracy exponentially. That's what everybody's going for.
22, one guy went one, and look, the NFL speaks.
Went to the Browns.
They did both go to the Browns, but it's not like if the Browns would have passed, he wouldn't have gone in the top three.
I agree. Yes,
you know what I mean. Yeah. So, whereas Johnny, if the Browns didn't take him at 22. He might still be going. I don't know how many teams would have taken a chance on Johnny Manziel.
He might be my ultimate frisbee team.
He might,
which I don't have.
And I think he'd be pretty good at it though. And I'd actually like you to start one.
Sounds like you got a team member.
Yeah. I would like
starting five right here.
I like it.
All right. So, you got any more?
By the way, you were. I have one more thing to say. You were talking about the Browns fans' reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see the Buffalo Bills fans' reaction from the bar that weighed the round? That was the look. The Bills and the Bengals are basically the same team, so I need to know.
Yeah, they are
about
besties.
Both of them at this point.
Yeah,
they
besties. Hug it out. Colors.
They've gone really to prom together. It's very personal. No, so there was a video from a bar in Buffalo, and they're all on edge as they wait to hear the Bills pick, and so someone's rolling on the camera, of course, and everyone goes. And then one guy goes, "It's okay, it's okay," and that is like the perfect slogan for
optimistic Bobby.
Yeah, basically, the like only thing I can give you is it's okay. Everyone, calm down. It's okay. That was the best possible reaction to taking Josh Allen. Everyone knows he's gonna suck. He's got Jake Locker written all over him. All
right, so. We are going to quickly transition.
Yes.
Smoothly. Away from Connor for a little bit, but
no,
we're gonna.
That's a pro.
We're gonna Beef's hot take, which is a scalding hot take, and it's
I'm gonna
about
go shovel your driveway real fast.
15 text messages, but so for those who continue to support the franchise, this is about the Bengals. Sorry, for those who continue to support the franchise financially. Relegated, hopefully now, to the self-identified loyal fan, quote-unquote, who still holds out hope that this regime will somehow produce a winner. Even during the golden years of 2009 to 2016, where in 7 years, the Bengals made the playoffs six times, most local pundits, especially Mr. Apologist Lance McAllister, argued that the Bengals were among the league's elite. That could not be further from the truth. In those 7 years, 20, that's capitalized, 20 different teams won a playoff game, or 62.5% of the NFL. How do you spend your money on a franchise where at their absolute apex, they still resided at the bottom third of the league? Is the hope of the current supportive, loyal fan base for continued mediocrity? Question mark. Maybe instead of buying tickets, you should use that cash to play Keno, or even better, pay your rent on time this month.
Or your mortgage.
Keno's a terrible game.
That's a scalding hot take. From Beef, and I mean, I don't even know if it's a take. It's just really just an insult to Bengals fans. But
no, I hear that. Here, the playoff game thing is a good topic to have over a couple beers, because I just feel like this is held over this franchise, and it should be. There is no doubt. It is the one thing that everyone has to answer for and has no answer for. Marvin, Andy, Mike Brown, the Trinity of the despised, right? Like, I mean, that's basically what they are at this point. They all have to answer that. They all cannot answer that because of what has happened in those playoff games. If Andy doesn't break his thumb, if Jeremy Hill doesn't fumble, now granted, both those things happened.
Sure.
You know, Pac-Man, Perfect. I mean, I hold the team. Pac-Man and Perfect, I hold the team over, because those guys were there knowing that those guys would do that in situations like that. Jeremy Hill fumbling is crazy. Like, what are the odds of that?
Now, I went from crying tears of joy with my boy Sox.
I wept. And then, I did. I wept. I felt it with me.
But I'm not taking away from what you're saying, because you're right. Because to me, that was the one where it's like, how my point on that was, how different would everyone view this whole conversation if that crazy string of events doesn't happen? All the way back to week 13, when Andy Dalton, in the greatest season of his life, breaks his thumb. Of course he does. Against the Steelers. right?
On a fluke play.
On a fluke play, right. In his, I mean, he's literally getting MVP talk.
Yeah.
When that is happening, when that happens, and you don't win the playoff game, it you know, how different is the conversation we have today if they did make a run? Let's say they narrowly lost to New England the next week. You know, how differently do we talk about this? 09, 13, 12, all of those should be thrown on the table as on you, as a franchise, as a coach, as a quarterback. Absolutely. But we view them, the whole topic of this, through a different light, if not for the crazy fluke of 15.
But how different is that conversation if AJ McCarron leads them to the win? And if you let him to a win the next week.
Absolutely. No, well, I mean, the McCarron thing would be and
bigger than you would get more tweets. Absolutely. And DMs than you are.
And my point would be the same. Would be if Andy Dalton is in that game, they would have beaten the Steelers in week 13 and in the playoffs handily. With him, that offense that year was crazy good. It was crazy good.
Very similar to 05 Carson Palmer.
Absolutely.
Against the Steelers.
Would have won that game.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Two comments from my end. One, that game was even more awful for me because I was at a wedding for one of my college buddies who happens to be from Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Steelers fan. Entire family Steelers fan. So we're watching the game and there's like 80% Steelers fans and 20% Bengals fans.
Yeah. It
was awful. But the other thing, at least for me, as a Cincinnati native, lifelong Cincinnati sports fan, not only do you have the Bengals, but what makes it worse and makes it even more frustrating is the fact that the Reds haven't done anything either. And the Reds have been in position to win a playoff series also, and they haven't done it. So then when you're coming off the Reds of 2010 to 2013 and they can't get anything done, you're like, the Bengals, they're going to do it. Somebody's going to advance in the playoffs. And then they just collapse.
Look.
So wait a minute. No, this is
the Cyclones lofted the Kelly Cup.
Yes. Yes, they did. Twice. Thank God.
They did it twice. So, representing the sea.
This is hard hitting. This is hard hitting journalism right here from Brian Chase. What he's trying to say to you right now, Paul Daner Jr., is it Andy and Marvin and Mike Brown's fault that the Reds haven't advanced in the playoffs? Is it their fault?
No, it's a good. This is a good segue because I find it interesting. Not interesting. I completely understand it, but I do find it interesting how much the Reds franchise is beloved, and they have been categorically worse than the Bengals a team over the course of the last 20 years. And because they understand embracing the fan base. The ownership has a stigma because of the stadium deal. Although the Reds were also part of that same stadium deal. But no one talks about that. But also the Reds pour money into their stadium because they have 81 games there a year. And they always build bars. And people like it when they build bars. And that's great.
Now you can get a beer outside the stadium. Absolutely. Before the game.
Right.
Because you're going to need it when you get in there.
Because when it's baseball and the way they treat you, they make it so the outcome of the game does not matter. But when it is the NFL and when it's the Bengals, if they don't win, Mike Brown sucks. Yeah. And so that is why the two franchises are viewed so differently, despite the fact that one has won at a high team. The team has sent them home happy so much more from Paul Brown Stadium than from Great American Ballpark, but you would think it is the absolute opposite because of the way that they're perceived in the community, the way they embrace the community, and the way they PR their asses off.
Sure, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to me, like, the Bengals, they went to, what, 5 straight playoffs from
2011
to 15. And I was just looking this up. Currently, anyone want to guess the longest playoff streak in the NFL?
Sure. Detroit Lions.
No.
3.
No. New England Patriots has 9.
Only the Castle
year. Oh,
after that the
Steelers, and he won 11 games.
The Patriots are at 9, the Steelers are at 4, and the Chiefs are at 3. And everyone else is at 1. So, like, I've told these guys this before, like,
who are these guys?
You guys, like, you know this.
Everyone but Paul, who hasn't regularly been around this group. Come on, Connor.
Like, I am a bank. I will say I'm more of a Bengals apologist than a hater because they went to five straight playoffs, and I grew up in the 90s when they were horseshit, like winning one and two games. And they go to
what
five
is your
straight.
J-O-B?
What?
When were you born?
12/23/87. So what? 2 weeks.
Yeah, we got a millennial here.
Jesus
Christ!
I feel bad for millennials. But like, say sports fans.
I'm just saying, like,
they've never seen anything.
They went to five.
Hey, we saw the '95 Reds get to the.
At least I saw a Super Bowl when I was 8. Right. In a World Series,
Silly Cup.
Yes, dude. The World. I can still tell you every single player from the '90 Reds because. That's epic game changing shit.
Let's
you guys have not had that.
No, let's do this.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
Stop.
I don't
first
want to
base.
Do that.
No, we're doing
Kyle
this.
Morris and Todd Benzinger.
Second base.
Mariano Duncan.
Shortstop.
Barry Larkin.
Third base.
Billy Hatcher?
Chris Sabo.
Billy Hatcher doesn't play fucking third base.
Sorry, Sabo.
Jesus. Hatcher.
Catcher Eddie Tobinsey and
Joe Oliver.
Left field.
Well, ED was in center.
That's Eric Davis.
Who was in left?
Glenn Braggs.
Was Braggs? He was right field.
Paul O'Neill.
Hatcher, right?
Was it? Yeah, Paul O'Neill.
Paul O'Neill was right field.
Where was Hatcher playing at that
point? He was a super sub, I think.
Yeah, but he was in every game.
He
I can't remember where he played.
Just call him left field.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, fine. Left field, and then, yeah, Paul O'Neill was a part of that
team. Who took over center field when Eric Davis went down?
Did Hatcher move over there?
That's a good question.
That is a good question. I'm trying to remember on that club.
A resident bully of the podcast.
But
tonight.
No, but I think the conversation we just had proved the point. We just named every member of a team from almost 30 years ago.
And these millennials don't know.
Well, right. They've never had a team that has made them remember.
We were three.
I am the king of this moment. Of this moment. You've got to create a moment for your fan base that they will never forget. 2010, Jay Bruce hits the walk. Everyone remembers that night.
Yep.
Everyone remembers the stadium.
I went to Valley Square.
It was special.
It was amazing.
And the Bengals did in 15, and then they effed the whole thing up afterwards. Everyone, there would be a statue of A.J. Green doing that move going over in front of Paul Brown Stadium right now if they had not screwed that up. You have to create moments. You have to, and the only way you can do that is winning the playoffs and winning championships. And that, and then you have people like us that recite every player was on a team in 1990.
Why doesn't Paul Brown embrace his players? Hall of Fame.
History.
Paul Brown is fair. He did in the 60s.
So much so that he has a stadium named after himself. Yeah. Like,
but I mean, like, to me, that's what it is. It's you have to create a moment for your fans.
Does a playoff, and this is... You deal with the Twitter aspect of Bengals fans all day, every day. Would a playoff win change the perception of Andy Dalton that much in this city?
Yes.
Yes.
Would it really?
Absolutely.
I think
everyone on the field that day would be looked at differently.
Would it change Marvin Lewis's perception in this
city? Look, how many – John Elway couldn't win at all. He was the guy who couldn't do it. He couldn't win the big game. Then Terrell Davis took him to two titles.
Yeah.
And now everyone calls John Elway one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Right.
Why?
The offensive
if Marvin
line.
Lewis got one world championship run, he would be able to say it. Oh, he would say it. About how I told you it was a fluke and everything else that we didn't make that we should have made runs and we had it in
Hold
us.
On. We're not asking for a Super Bowl championship. We're asking for one playoff.
Would you be happy for Marvin Lewis if he won a Super Bowl?
I would be happy for fans.
Do you think
he would
smile on you?
I would be happy for.
He would be conflicted.
I root for two things. I root for me. Yeah. And I root for the city of Cincinnati. I love this city more than anything, and I root for it. And I root for myself mostly, though. But I mean, that's what it is.
Who's going to root for you? Who's going to root for you?
No one's rooting for me except me.
I'm a big fan.
But the city of Cincinnati, I root for in all cases. Every sport, Xavier, UC, you name it. I want the city to have something because God knows it has been deprived and needs it. It's bad, and so you know we all my friends, family, people like you guys that are like wanting this.
Drinking and recording podcasts.
Like,
yeah, who's doing that?
You just, everyone here deserves a payoff. Everyone in this city deserves a payoff. And I hate that there's like this tortured nature to this city right now. It's from a sports perspective, it sucks.
This is, I keep going back to this, but doesn't Marvin Lewis deserve a little bit of that too? Does he or does he not? I speak from a perspective of being a Marvin fan, and yeah. I don't cover him, so
yeah.
I don't know how that is. But like, I like him because
it's like a unicorn. Like, we should snap a picture.
But like, what again?
A Marvin
again,
Lewis fan
or a
again,
Yeti?
But again, I grew up in the '90s when Dave Shula and Bruce Coslett.
Love them.
Just because they had one of the worst decades in the history of sports doesn't mean it's okay to accept mediocrity now. That's the one thing that does come up a lot. It's like, but they're better than the 90s. Like, I don't buy that because that was general. Like, in the history of sports, nothing's been worse than that team.
And I don't think that
except maybe the Browns.
I wanted them to get rid of them.
1-1A right now, which is amazing.
Yeah. Like, I wanted them to get a new coach, but at the same time, like, who are they going to get that was markedly better this year that could take them back to the playoffs? Which you have to get to the playoffs to win a playoff game.
Yeah.
So he's shown that he can do that, which no other coach has done here for 30 years, whatever it is. So,
yeah, but he's been here for almost 20 of those 30 years.
But, like, he's shown that he can get there.
And lose there. He's 0-7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is this. I mean, they had the... This was the perfect opportunity for everyone to go their own ways and move on. And
did they miss the boat with Hugh Jackson?
If Hugh would have been... my opinion. This is strictly my opinion here. If Hugh Jackson would have been fired, if Jay Gruden would have been fired, even if Vance Joseph would have been fired, I think one of those guys would have been the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals right now. But I think Marvin's phone didn't ring and Mike's phone didn't ring.
Yeah.
And they looked at each other and said, we are the best option for both of us. I think that's what happened. And so the whole thing with Marvin is he is 0-7.
Yeah. And you can't deny that. I mean,
that's just it. And when we sat down when everything happened in Minnesota with the Schefter report, we sat down and said, how do we handle these next 3 weeks? Like, they're denying it. There is...
Did you have any... Or was that...
That was out of nowhere. Just, that was out of nowhere.
Yeah, okay.
That was completely out of nowhere. No one... I mean...
If you listen to the BBP... You would know.
We were shocked. We were shocked by it because we had been. I mean, we literally asked Marvin, directly about this a day before this report came out, and so when this happens, how do we handle this? Was our question, and you know, we just said all we can do is report what we know, and the team was saying, he's saying no, and nobody on staff was really believing that, and. Nobody was really... Everyone assumed that Marvin would eventually go his own way.
Sure.
But he was saying no, and the team was saying we'd not heard anything like that. So what do? Like, we have to write this is the end of Marvin's story. So I'm like, I'm just going to write about his legacy here. And that was when I was like, you know what? His legacy here is I went back to his first press conference, literally his introductory press conference. I got the transcript of it and went through all of it. And everything he was asked over and over again. You can imagine the questions that he was getting in 2003. He checked every frigging box except the only one that matters to him. Yeah, through his own words. The only thing that matters to him is winning a world championship. The only thing that matters, and he has not even gotten them in the right direction. But there were probably 20 boxes he was asked to check in that introductory press conference. He's checked 19 of them.
Yeah.
And most of them with a Sharpie a long time ago.
Absolutely.
But the big one at the top, number one.
Which is what everyone cares about. Which is
all that matters.
Yeah, no, sure.
It's not all that matters. I mean, everything, a lot of the other stuff he's done is important. But, I mean, really, that's what he's here to do. He's changed the culture. He's changed the community. He's changed the view of the Bengals. He's changed people's lives. Yeah. Like, he has made them fun and at times and relevant and all those things. But until you win, until you make that run, you don't make the fans feel special. You don't create a moment. You don't bring a ring. You don't give any of those things that you said you would do.
I think from a fan's perspective, at least for me, the thing that's a little dumbfounding about the playoffs and the fact that he's 0-7 is a lot of those years they played really well. They, you know, throughout the season they were playing well. They were playing well going into the playoffs. And then the playoffs, you get this team that it's like, this isn't the team that I've watched for the last six or 7 weeks. So why is that happening? To me, that's got to be on the coaching. And
like the Exhibit A is the team Chargers game.
Yeah, the Chargers
the
game.
In what, 2013?
Yeah.
They just beat the shit out of the Chargers 3 weeks before that.
Yep.
Running the ball. Yeah.
They threw it 52 times.
Or the team that refuses to throw the ball to A.J. Green in the first half of a playoff game in Houston.
They had.
Well, let's throw them off.
Zimmer had a defense humming like never before. And they got a pick six by Leon Hall, who was playing incredibly, and they still couldn't put it together enough to win. The bottom line is that Marvin's teams play tight in big games. That has been his history. Dude, when I had to go through the numbers, like, I hate to re-rack those. But it's like when you bring out the games that matter, prime time, to fans. Mm-hmm. And players and coaches can say all they want about how prime time game is just another game. Yeah, well, to players, it's not just another game. Players talk all the time about Monday Night Football. But they still talk about that. So when you talk about how you have prime time game, and you are, since 2003... 32nd in the NFL as a franchise in primetime games and 0-7 in playoffs.
Right.
Your teams play tight in big games. That is part of your DNA.
Is that coaching players?
That's coaching. At this point, 15 years, we have more than enough.
You're turning over a roster so much that like you can't just...
Different players are through.
Yeah.
Different assistant coaches are through. There's only one thing that is connected to that 32nd
ranking.
Why
do players like playing for him then?
But here's... Well, he gives them leeway. He is a CEO that lets players be pros.
Is he the Dusty Baker of the NFL? Is that what I just heard?
What's that?
He's the Dusty Baker of the NFL?
Well, I think they have very similar...
Their resumes are very similar.
There's a whole lot of similarities between Dusty Baker and Marvin.
Does he give his coaches... I don't know, but does Marvin give his coaches the leeway in the playoff game? Like, because they've shown that they can do it at times in the regular season when they go to the playoffs. You know, they've had a 12-4 or whatever, right? 12-4, I think, 1 year. And then they just tighten up. So is it Marvin just projecting onto his assistant coaches, or does he just tighten everyone up?
You know, it's you know, that you could probably talk for hours about it. I mean, I would say,
to me,
it seems like there's just a tone that is set, and that his teams have trouble playing relaxed, intense situations.
Yeah, and you,
they don't know how because he's all business, he's all hard work, and he's great at that, and that's why his teams are good. And through the grind of the season, because they are hardworking, they win the games they should, they play at a certain level every week. But there's no... The fun and relaxation that comes along with every good team's run, like, you know, every team has that, like, they just seem like they're having more fun than everybody else, and that's why they win. The Eagles last year are a prime example of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that never happens.
You know who Marvin needs to bring in when the playoffs come around?
Bernie Mac. Oh, he's dead.
Damn. Well, I was going to say Kevin Hart.
Mr. 300.
Well, I was going a lot more a different direction.
I should have gone Kevin Hart. That was bad.
How about Carl Kramer?
Yeah.
How many state championships has that guy won? You're a Mueller guy, so.
I mean, I don't know how Carl would do in the Bengals locker room.
Oh, that's true, but...
Hey, guys, you need to have respect for this high school basketball coach. It's a little different.
All right.
Sam Hubbard would respect it.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. So let's transition. Let's transition a little bit because we're at an hour.
We're getting deep.
This is an hour. I was not told how long this is supposed to be, so I brought my endurance stick.
You're good. This is the best podcast we've done. So, I'm not trying to...
Can I do another one of these?
Of course.
If we're going to keep going, I need another one. So I can
do it. It's really interesting what he said in terms of the team tightening up and not making... I'm sort of implying what he was just saying, what Paul was just saying, but the team's not making the plays that they normally make. And the two plays that stick out to me from that statement are the Chargers game in 2013, right? At home, Geo fumbles on that little screen play.
Five-yard line.
Going in for a score. And then the year before that, I believe, when they lose to Houston, in Houston, on fourth down, Andy has AJ wide open. He makes that play 8 out of 10 times, at least that year. He makes that play and he makes that throw.
Yep.
And they just don't. And I mean, it goes to what Paul was just saying in terms of the team playing tighter in those big games. And it's just interesting how, after 7 tries at it, you would think at some point, maybe you change up. Well, and it doesn't seem like he wants to.
Hold on. Marvin Lewis is going to change something about Marvin
right.
Lewis.
You know who you're getting.
Yes. And yeah.
But the other thing that's a little frustrating is, and I'm bringing this back to the Bengals and the Reds, is in a lot of the big games that we've had, it's not obscure players that are making the bad plays that are costing both teams games. It's some of the players that have been the best players on the team all year.
Brandon Phillips,
first to third in the first inning in Game 3, 2012.
Homer Bailey pitches his ass
off. Homer Bailey pitched a hell of a game. If Phillips just sits his ass on second base, the Reds probably score in the first inning, and they might win a World Series because the Giants went on and did that.
How much does every single sports conversation in this city end at the same place? It's like the 18th hole of a mini golf course. You know, eventually that putt is going to circle to the bottom of the hole, and you're going to end up talking about Brandon Phillips and Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton and that and Jeremy Hill's fumble. Like, you know where you're going to end up every time. It's just the hole of sadness.
The
at the
only
end of the course.
Positive thing about this city, sports wise,
it is. Stop laughing at me, clown.
But literally, if Cincinnati did not have Xavier basketball, and I will say Cincinnati basketball and football when Kelly was here, like, the professional teams have given us nothing over the last 30 years.
Cyclones.
Okay.
Hoist the Kelly Cup.
The first Kelly Cup championship was awesome. I was at that game and it was amazing.
FCC.
You know where I was when the fucking Cyclones raised that Kelly Cup?
The Betty. Yeah.
Well,
2 weeks.
You're lost.
2 weeks out.
The Betty.
Anyway. What's next, Soxie?
All right, so you were going to be at the cupboard.
So let's. Zing! All right, so let's transition just a touch. Paul, we want to give you a chance, your former beat.
Yeah.
To talk a little bit about, I mean, I don't know if you have a lot of thoughts about Bearcat football, or if you want to go straight
to... I don't
want to
talk about Bearcat football. Those are the days that I really like to forget. Covering, Bearcat football, spring football is, some of the worst stuff of my
career. So, a good friend of ours, and a huge fan of the podcast, if he's ever listened, is Digger...
He's a fan, though.
Yeah, totally a fan,
if he's ever listened to
Mr. Digger Bujnov. Good buddy of ours. He plays golf with us, and
I would call that golf.
He's not very good.
He's not good at golf.
He does attempt to play,
but he beat the hell out of Matt once.
Physically.
Went to
Devon. Yeah.
No, I was very drunk.
There was a situation.
Yeah, I could have been sober.
Matt and his brother decided that they could take on Digger Buznak at his current.
No. We like, lost.
Yeah.
See, he's not right. Fat anymore.
Yeah, he's slim, and he nearly he could have killed one of them.
Yeah,
legitimately.
But cool.
All right, Booz, you're probably not listening, so you know if you are, we'll have you on. So we'll glaze over Bearcat football, but Bearcat basketball.
Or do we want to talk NBA? It's up to you. I mean,
I it's your show. I'm strictly
here to chime in.
I don't whatever you want to go.
We can make it. You can make it too.
Damn, I do want to hear if your thoughts on the Cats next year, because we've talked a little bit about them and we don't have a ton of knowledge as far as what they lose a lot, and they have some young guys on the team that have shown some promise, but at the same time, those young guys haven't played a lot of minutes because of a certain coach that we may or may not be a huge fan of on the podcast. But
so just to piggyback a little bit there, like I feel like Mick doesn't really develop players all that well. I don't know if that's a big secret.
It's kind of like the Marvin thing. We're not gonna, 15 years.
But we're not going to pick on.
We're not. No, yeah, but I'm just saying.
Mick's got 4 years with the guy.
I think he has talent that's coming back next year is basically where I was eventually going to get to this. I just had to start with a little shot at,
of course, yeah,
at Mick. Because I don't really care for him, but I think they have talent coming back, but at the same time, what can he do with the talent that they have coming back? And they're not going to be as good as they were this year.
No, this was their
I
year.
I mean, this was
That's the thing that's so gnarly about the loss in round two is that that was the... Going into this tournament, you knew... This was the team that needs to make the run to, it's like we talked about with the Bengals stuff.
Yeah.
To create the moment. Like, this is the team that needs to kill all the stereotypes about Mick, about UC basketball, and about UC basketball going all the way back to, like, mid-Bob Huggins.
Yeah.
Like, they have been losing the second round UC Bearcats since, like, 96, right?
Yeah.
Since Danny Fortson.
Yeah.
And so it's that is a long ass time.
Well, they've been the Sweet 16 twice since
the
96.
One time they went when they won the absolute sumo rock fight with Florida State.
Yeah.
It's the only time under Mick
that
they have made it to the Sweet 16. Yeah. And otherwise it's been a whole lot of brutal losses in the first and second round. And it was like, this is the team that needs to kill that narrative because they have the team to do it. And guess what happened? Because Mick has complained and their whole staff has complained about the draw has not fallen their way in so many times.
You gotta go to the West Coast or whatever it is.
Send you to the West Coast. And you've had to play UCLA and you had to play in Spokane and you had to do all these things. That made it so hard. And Xavier got the easy road because the 12 seed, everything fell your way.
Yeah. You get Georgia
everything
State
fell
Nevada.
Your way. And not to mention the other side of the bracket.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a cakewalk to the Final Four.
Loyola made it to the Final Four.
It's a cakewalk.
Loyola Chicago made it to the Final Four in their region. And they could not hold a 22-point lead against the Bat.
10 minutes.
That is the killer. That is, to me... That is the brutal aspect of this, is that this team will never be recreated. They're going to lose everybody. It's a huge rebuild at this point. And that was the chance to kill all the narratives. Instead, the narratives have never been stronger. And they don't really have the firepower until probably maybe 2019 to knock them down. I mean, you never know. Maybe these guys will show up. And they're all great, and they'll be better. But I, you know,
is he turning into a Marvin Lewis type?
This is character? A city full of Marvin Lewis type characters.
No, but like,
except for Chris Mack, who's now a Louisville.
Right. No, but in terms of coaches, I mean,
don't remind us. Yeah. Right.
Oh,
I mean that's.
But don't remind Mack.
Every single
I called it
team,
7 months ago. People.
Every single team in this city has the same markers.
But Mick doesn't. Mick seems to. I don't know, at least from the local radio, seem to
Mick gets a pass.
Escape criticism a little
Mick gets
bit.
A pass.
A little bit more.
He certainly didn't a few years ago. I mean,
no, but this year, I think he did.
Well, because they won so much. I mean, they won the AC. They won the tournament.
I love
that
you keep calling it the AC.
It's terrible. It's a terrible conference. It deserves a terrible name.
That's the last night. That's so funny.
It deserves to sound like something you throw up like a hair ball.
I know. You keep saying, I'm like, what the fuck is that?
But it's awful. It's just the worst.
Oh, yeah, Tulane's in the act. That's
Tulane.
Right. Yeah,
there we go. East Carolina. So they deserve, you know, the accolades for what they did. I mean, they won the tournament. They won their conference. They won a crap load of games.
Yeah.
They beat some good teams. I give them credit for that. So I think that bought him the criticism. But, I mean, he took a ton of heat over the course of the last 5 years. His fan base still doesn't really...
Well, I know they still...
Because they all are still fawning over Bob Huggins. Like, Bob Huggins wasn't the guy getting eliminated in the second round
right.
for 10 yeah. straight years until he was kicked off to the curb.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
And they love Bob Huggins in West Virginia.
They love... Well, they do. Well, and he's also gone to the Final Four.
And neither one of them can beat Xavier to beat.
And he's an all-time
consistent
basis, so. And I think they like that in West Virginia. I mean, I know we'll have Bob on the podcast someday.
Bob obviously. And Dana Holy
Literally, Spirit. I know. Bob and Dana are
Has anyone
like,
belonged on this podcast more than Bob?
Maybe Dana Holy Spirit.
That's it.
They might fall asleep. I mean, you guys would probably need to have some bottles of wine here, but I mean, outside of that, I mean, you're good.
We got plenty of that.
You are good. No, that's to me the interesting thing about the Mick haters for UC is that Mick is doing the exact same thing that Huggins' teams were doing, except his teams graduate most of the people and don't have any near of the off the field crap that Huggins' teams did.
Yeah,
Mick's teams are the same. They've been losing in the second round, and that's the knock on the court. But Huggins' teams, you know. I mean, I'm not going to go down the list.
Well, the difference
you know,
is
the
Huggins,
field crap that happened.
Huggins could spin anything positively, and Mick is just an angry leprechaun, is really what it comes down to, in my opinion. But you do have to
remember. That's Brian Chase.
I was going to say, Mick is great with the media. Like, in general, that helps
him
too.
I also think Mick, like, I'm not a Mick fan, and I'm a UC grad, even though I'm a Xavier fan.
You say Mick's great with the media?
He's good with the media. He's very good with the media.
UC media, maybe.
In general, I
UC
mean, like
sports media person, not very good. Then, like,
he looks up to him.
But you do have to give the guy credit. I mean, last year they won 30 games. Or by last year, I mean 2016, 2017, they won 30 games, lose to UCLA in the second round of the tournament,
which is fine.
This year, you blow the lead against Nevada, which is awful. Like. You think they need to get to the second weekend. If they do, they maybe make it to the Final Four. They've got a good shot. But like
easy road.
They still had an unbelievable year. And same with Xavier. It's really frustrating when both teams are, you look and it's like, yeah, this is the year that they can do it. And then they do the same thing that the Bengals and the Reds
exactly
do where you
said.
Just,
what you just
as
said.
Paul said, they're sphincter titans and they both have huge leads. Xavier wasn't as big, but they both have double-digit leads with 10 minutes left in the second half, and you can't close the deal to get to the second weekend. And if you get to the second weekend, anything's possible.
If they would have gotten the second weekend, it would have been viewed as a
successful
winning,
season.
Successful season for UC in particular because they had I mean, Xavier, not as much because they were the one, and they've done it before, and... Final Four is sort of that thing, but I mean...
Xavier was one this year? I didn't realize that.
I completely forgot
about the season after they lost.
Yeah, when they're a 6 seed or State. Worse, that's usually when they advance to the
I want
weekend.
Them to be a 7 from now on out.
Right. But I mean, UC and Mick has done a phenomenal job there, and it's like it's the same Marvin conversation.
That's the exact comparison.
You cannot discredit what it took to pull them out of where they were.
I think
that's fine, but at a certain point, you have done a great job of raising the bar, but you've got to push them over the bar. And in college basketball, It's March.
I think
it's March or nothing.
And I think the only thing that
you have to embrace that.
Yeah.
In terms of that's the thing that he
the
does.
Pressure, the pressure, like the winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mick doesn't see and doesn't seem to embrace that just based on his comments this year, especially after the loss. Like, you have to embrace what the tournament means to that sport. If you're going to be a head coach of a power team like UC is, even if they're in a terrible conference, you have to embrace the fact that March matters.
Now, like, you guys know this more than anybody. Xavier built their reputation on March Madness.
Yes,
I remember when I first came back here, I was working for CNATI. Shout out CNATI, which no one remembers.
I remember CNATI.
Yes, it was a thing. Yeah. That's where I got started coming back here. But I covered college hoops. I did Xavier, and in the year they had Jordan Crawford, and they had the amazing game against Kansas.
The best game in the history of the NCAA tournament. Yes. That was not a Final Four game.
I did. Yeah, so yeah. I remember, though.
Well, and not only that game, the cross-town shootout that year was unbelievable. Yeah. The Lance Stephenson-Crawford battle, back and forth, double overtime.
Double overtime.
Oh, that
so
was
it was
great
ridiculous,
game.
That game.
Yeah.
But I remember going covering Xavier that year and writing the story about talking to guys on that team about how watching Xavier win games in March influenced their recruiting, because that was how they built the entire thing, was on the runs they had with, you know, go back to Romain Sato and like all the 04, all those, whatever those teams were. And when you were a kid, you saw Xavier in March, and now you knew that they were a team that you want to go play for because you want to be the guy making that play.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a team that was making those plays, you couldn't recruit the same way. But that's how Xavier based their recruiting.
Absolutely.
On, because they had those runs, and that's why they had such good quality recruits and teams and players that were coming in. I remember, and they all were like, yeah, like, I knew about Xavier because I watched. And they were naming specific plays from tournaments 4 years ago. And I was like, that's just amazing. But if you don't have those, you're fighting an uphill battle in recruiting as well. And if you are not in a big, which, you know, it's amazing how it's flipped now, but if you are not in a huge conference, you need to sell those moments because you don't have those moments in the regular season. You are not playing in the Big East where you're playing Villanova and you're playing back in the day when you were playing Syracuse and Georgetown when you were UC.
No.
You don't have those.
I'm not trying to steer this back to a Xavier conversation, but I'm going to for a minute. What's really interesting about Xavier is the last 3 years, you know, last year all of us were so excited when they beat Arizona and they get to the Elite Eight. Like, just getting to the Sweet 16 was like euphoria, and then they beat Arizona, they get to the Elite Eight, and you look back at that year, and you're, as a fan, you're so fulfilled by what happened. But the year before that, and then this year, in the regular season, I mean, they're one of the top six or seven teams in the country both years. I don't think there's any way that you can argue they're not, but they don't make it to the second weekend event of either of those tournaments, and it's like, which way do you want it? You know, and which way is ultimately better for driving your program?
Do you want to be the underdog that wins when they shouldn't, or do you want to be the heavy favorite that loses when they shouldn't?
I mean, I think it's very, very clear. I mean, Villanova has won two of the last three national championships, and now, all of a sudden, after they won that title 3 years ago, they're getting five stars left and right. So, but when you start winning titles, when you start making Final Fours,
but I mean, when Nova has done that, they've been high seeds. Xavier just
I understand that, but you have to progress, and that's kind of what Paul was saying earlier. Yeah. Like, you have to at some point make that run and give the people a moment to remember.
And what's if you interesting? Don't, what's then interesting? You're not gonna get it. Yeah, I agree. And what's interesting to me about Cincinnati is everybody talks about Carolina Duke and how they're so close, but like, is there another place in the country that has as good of college basketball as Cincinnati? Because obviously this year, Xavier, like you were just saying, Paul, Xavier's in
this year is unprecedented.
The better conference. But Xavier fans expect them to be in contention to get to the second weekend every year, and then when that happens, who knows what happens? And the Bearcats, for the past, I mean, the first 4 years that Mick was there, they're really struggling to get the program back on track. But since then, they have consistently been in contention for either their conference or when they weren't in contention at the Big East, they're still getting NCAA tournament bids, and they have a chance to win. So it's just both of these programs, it's like the fan bases are both really crying for a Final Four appearance, and I feel like they're both so close, but they just can't get over the hump.
Xavier's close. Like, they've made it close. I mean, the bottom line is, I'm not going to say you're close to Final Four appearance unless you're playing in the Elite Eight.
Sure.
It's just, at a certain point, you've got to show that you have a team that's capable of making that run, and one of them is and one of them isn't.
And maybe that's the Marvin comparison right there, is Mick has gotten the Bearcats to the next level, but they need that next young, hungry coach to come in and really, I don't know if Mick...
Wait, is this breaking news? Are you reporting a new coaching hire?
I'm not, but I'm saying, I think one of the things about Xavier is the last 35 or 40 years, they've had a young, hungry coach for the most part that is aggressive at selling Xavier and what it can do for whatever that student athlete is. And maybe Mick isn't the best pitch man out there. I can tell you, I wouldn't buy something from Mick.
I don't know. I mean, he has been able to recruit teams that are quality teams and good players. I mean, the Gary Clarks, getting Kyle Washington, you know, Troy Copain. You go through the list of players that they've had. I mean, in teams that they've had. I mean, it's not like
I think it comes down to style. I think at the end of the day, like if there's a UC fan out there that isn't a Mick guy, or if there's Xavier, like you said, like what Xavier fan isn't a Mick fan of Mick Cronin. But I think stylistically, people find in this city, a lot of people find it hard to hear Mick Cronin say, "This is the best offensive team that I've had. I have Jacob Evans, I have Jaron Cumberland, I have Gary Clark, I have these guys that can run."
He says that every play. Year, though.
That's what I'm saying, is that then they run for a couple games, and then they stop running.
They're not playing fast. RPI.
And yes, they do play great defense. But
here's the other thing I think that's got to be frustrating for UC fans, is you listen to Mick talk about Hugs and Patino, and it's like, you followed, you know, you're from this coaching tree, but you can't win like those guys won.
Well, I mean, you're not going to. I think it's very similar, again, Mick to Marvin sort of comparison, in terms of, like, Mick took UC from pretty
bottom, 90s Bengals.
Pretty bottom of the barrel when he took over.
Yeah.
To where the ceiling right now, with how he confronts things and how he plays things, is probably an Elite Eight, Sweet 16. But they're not going to win a national championship the way that they play basketball, I don't think.
No. To me, Mick has done a great job of seeing the market inefficiency of college basketball, and that is, I can recruit the best defensive players and get them. Yes. And that's how he got this team back from, yep, because they couldn't recruit anybody when he first started.
He's like, you know what, I can
recruit the greatest defensive players that are out there in high school basketball. Yeah. Guys that just will, I mean,
because Duke's not after him. No, Kentucky's not after
guys
him.
Guys that are great at defense.
Yeah.
Because I remember they would talk about guys where Octavius Ellis always kicks up in my brain, because they talked about recruiting him. And they talked about how there was a game where they were down by 30 or something, his team, and he did not quit. And in the last minutes, he was still blocking shots and like diving on the floor. And they're like, those are the guys that he wants. Guys that are just warriors that will absolutely give everything they have every second of every game and be, because that's what defense is. It's hustle. It's guys that care. And they find the best guys in the country at that. You know what that doesn't win? Tournament games. Yeah. Because everybody plays hard in March.
Right.
Because everybody is like, oh, now I'm at the moment I've cared about all year. Right. And now I'm going to play hard and be good at offense.
One shining moment, if you will.
Absolutely. But it does great for you over the grind of a season, because guys that play hard every night and play defense and care about playing defense will win you a shit ton of games.
Absolutely.
And that's important. But will that take you to the next level? Like you said, it's style, and I think that is part of it. Now, Mick has risen them up enough where he can now recruit guys that play hard and have some offensive skill. Can Mick Cronin turn those players into a good offensive team is the defining question of his tenure. Because he has proven he can get good defensive players. But if he can get an offensive team that can be top 30 KenPom, I mean, something like that, it could win it all because of the way that they play defense. We will see if that's a question that we have an answer to, but I don't know.
Questions that remain to be answered.
Yes.
And with that, we're going to wrap it up. We would like to wholeheartedly thank Paul Danner Jr. for coming on.
Thank you guys for having me. I hope I didn't talk too much.
We want you back.
You're welcome back anytime.
Well, except next week. If you continue to serve up as many beers as you did, then that won't be an issue.
I think
Bengals season every Sunday night, 6:30.
Yeah, yeah.
6:30, I think, is going to work fine for you.
Yeah.
So,
easy to be.
Oh,
my goodness.
Yeah.
I think, as the Backstreet Boys said it best, I want you back.
Oh, wow.
And with that, we have been overserved, and I'm pretty sure every one of us except for Paul Danner Jr. has under-delivered, and we will see you guys next week. Have a good night.